Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, May 17th. And Mike Budenholzer off the board for the Pistons. So who is next now? This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP sports writer here in Chicago covering the NBA. Been following the Pistons my whole life, while being a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today we're going to recap Wednesday's Houston Rockets triumph. Good for them. A nice win. Maybe we'll have a series after all. And we'll also let you know what the Pistons GT team is up to this weekend as the NBA gets together here in Chicago for the draft combine as well. And I'm also going to tell you about my latest fascinations for the front office candidacy for the Pistons. Among the names that were floated by Adrian Wojnarowski on a Twitter report of ESPN.com on Wednesday afternoon. Today's Pistons playoff playback takes us back to 1991 and maybe the last great triumph for the Bad Boys. But if you're following the NBA playoffs closely, which I'm guessing most of you are, you should be listening to Locked On Warriors and also the shows for Locked On Rockets and Cavaliers and Celtics as well. And check out the Locked On NBA shows. Great content from those guys as the teams are in the Final Four, and it is time for exciting basketball for the franchises that have worked their way up there or maybe got lucky and lucking into some talented players being born in the Cleveland metro area or however those teams got to those situations. But here in Chicago, it is, like I mentioned, NBA Draft Combine weekend. I'll be at the Draft Combine today at the Quest Multisports Center in Chicago, south of the United Center. Pretty bad neighborhood, by the way, that they host the Draft Combine, and it's a pretty interesting place that they have all the prospects and coaches and GMs go. It's not like there's hotels real close by. Obviously, there's some all over the city, but it's just a strange place, a homeless shelter right next door. I remember walking out of the Combine last year with people lined up for food right outside, basically. Just a strange place to host the Draft Combine. But I'll be bringing you guys some interviews and sharing the stories of a couple guys that I'm writing about this week, too. Alizé Johnson of the Missouri State Bears, a possible second-round pick for the News Leader in Springfield. I'm writing about him. And also Jonte Porter, the Mizzou big man, the younger brother of Michael Porter Jr. I'll be writing about him for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as well. I wrote a couple stories last year for the Kansas City Star at the Combine, so I guess that's kind of my thing now, writing for Missouri papers at the NBA Draft Combine. Excited to see how that goes. Jeff Bauer, I know, is there with a couple of staff members, including Pat Garrity, representing the Pistons. Those guys are under contract through the end of June, so and Jeff Bauer mentioned as one of the candidates to be a front office member going forward and leading the way for the Pistons as well. So we'll try to talk to those guys if we get a chance too. But on the court Wednesday night, the Houston Rockets evened up the Western Conference Finals with a must-win Game 2, which they did, 127-105 against the Golden State Warriors, 27 points apiece for James Harden and Eric Gordon, 22 for P.J. Tucker and his strongest playoff game of his career as well, getting paid this offseason for him, 38 points for Kevin Durant and another strong game for him in the Western Conference Finals. But his Splash Brothers teammates did not show up. Steph Curry, obviously still not 100%. Klay Thompson did not score in double digits as he was 3-for-11 from the field. So just a bad game. The Rockets took control early on and hung on. Bad game in terms of nothing entertaining about it, unfortunately. I don't know. I mean, we wait for these games all year and then seem to get let down, especially, you know, making reference to the NBA Finals there with the Warriors running all over the Cavs last year and three seasons ago, although the one that the Cavs won 2 years ago was obviously a very entertaining NBA Finals as well, especially when the series, when you get game by game, they're all pretty much dictated by who the desperate team is. Sometimes even when you do have somewhat evenly matched teams like the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors on. But who knows? Maybe we'll get a couple of classics down the stretch in this series. It's the whole season's kind of been building up to the end of this Golden State Warriors. And however you feel about the Celtics, obviously, as Pistons fans, as someone who grew up just hating the Boston Celtics myself, I can't shake that DNA myself. So I have always rooted against the Boston Celtics, always rooted against Boston sports teams, especially during this past decade plus where they've been dominating the sports scene, and it just gets sickening to see that and hear those fans talking about it constantly. But if you're a Boston Celtics fan, obviously you're pleasantly surprised by what's going on with that team. We knew that the East was pretty much wide open for all teams in the playoffs. We just didn't know that the team who had been controlling the East for maybe the first two-thirds of the regular season would have those big injuries. Well, the second big injury is they lost Hayward all season. But Irving goes down and the team's young guys step up. So, you know, nice entertainment factor for those following the Boston Celtics, but for those of us who already hate the Celtics anyway, it kind of makes the playoffs even more, you know, kind of gross and disgusting to watch, especially here we're sitting as Pistons fans who've been watching, you know, crap for now 8 to 10 years, and really not a very easy way to see, not a very feasible way at all to see this franchise getting out of the murk and the muck here in these next couple years. But now that I've depressed you a little bit, look ahead to Sunday night, big game three in that one back in Oakland. Obviously, we will see what happens. And now we're stuck with no basketball until Saturday night when the Celtics and Cavs will resume things in game three in Cleveland. I mean, I picked the Cavaliers to win this series before the series, but obviously you can throw mine and probably yours and everyone you know's predictions out the window this offseason just because some teams are showing up and some teams really aren't. Cleveland's got a chance to really fold and possibly get swept in the series like I kind of figured they would, given how much they struggled against Indiana in the first round. I figured Toronto would come up with a big effort and bury them in that series pretty easily, but it turns out that they didn't have the horses and the defense, where the Boston Celtics certainly have both of those. And you really could see a scenario where Boston gets at least one of these games in Cleveland and finishes this out in five. And obviously that's, you know, is that my new prediction? I don't know, who cares? But you could definitely see that happening. But we know the history of LeBron James, and we know that certainly he could rise to the occasion and get four straight, really, if he plays well. Boston's not a very good team. And really, we could have a couple of building up here for some long and entertaining finishes to these conference finals matchups. But no matter what the matchups are with the two teams in the NBA Finals, I really can't bring myself to seeing a way that the NBA Finals is anything other than a cakewalk for the Western Conference champions. But again, I've been wrong before, and if I think it's going to be a crap NBA Finals, maybe you should put your money on it going six or seven games. But anyway, speaking of some things to brighten up your day as Detroit sports fans, the Pistons GT team, the video game team for NBA 2K Live, NBA 2K League, the inaugural season this summer for the Adam Silver's group there, they will open the weekend for the NBA 2K League, playing in the first game of the Week 2 regular season, playing the Bucks Gaming at 7 p.m. Eastern on Twitch on Friday night. Maybe the Pistons GT team could get some revenge for the Bucks taking Mike Budenholzer away from the Pistons. Not that the Detroit team was really factored much into the Budenholzer search for any reports or anything like that. But a pipe dream that I had, and maybe some other Pistons fans had as well, of landing Mike Budenholzer didn't come true. So let's take it out on the Bucks Gaming team. Pistons GT is a 1-0 in the regular season after beating Miami last weekend. Bucks Gaming is 0-1, so a little bit more desperate. We'll see how that goes. These teams also met in the very first game of the preseason tournament, with the Pistons GT getting the 49-44 win, which is obviously very low scoring, even for the league, and we'll see what's changed with these two teams since then. Again, 7 o'clock Eastern on Friday night on Twitch, kicking off the weekend of action in the NBA 2K League. Let's get it, Ramo, with a big first regular season game, 16-11-5, the first round pick for the Pistons GT game team out of Brooklyn. He's as good as advertised, leading the team so far. Matt Rux, I like that guy, the big fella, the center, talking smack throughout the game. Insanity, the Lockdown Pistons favorite, he was on the show, so good luck to the boys. We'll be looking forward to checking in on them soon. I think I'll be missing Friday night's game as I'll be wrapping up things at the Combine there as well. But we're also going to be breaking down the list of potential front office guys and who I like for those jobs, of the names that Adrian Wojnarowski floated on Wednesday on ESPN and also on Twitter. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, @yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on, we will have Pistons playoff playback since we can't live in the present with all these teams in the conference finals dredging up those old good memories that we have that we can at least relive the past with some of those conference finals appearances, NBA finals appearances. Oh, those were the days. But with Mike Budenholzer off the board, I think the Pistons, by the way, now need to go back to the traditional road. I had mentioned in an earlier podcast that if Budenholzer could be had, and if it was possible to bring him in as coach of the Pistons, then maybe you could kind of go out of the order and bring him in first and kind of think about the front office next if you had to make that move right away. Now that he's off the board, I think it's, you know, more of a go the traditional route. Budenholzer has agreed to coach the Milwaukee Bucks, by the way, in case I didn't mention that. He had breakfast with Chris Middleton, former Piston, and Giannis on Wednesday, according to Zach Lowe. And then by the afternoon, he had agreed to become the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. Interestingly enough, Adrian Wojnarowski reported that so the Toronto Raptors never even made an offer to Mike Budenholzer. So maybe they have other things in mind with their head coaching candidacies. So, like I said, make the hires in order now. Get the president of basketball operations. Let him put a front office together. Let those guys in tandem or group put a coaching staff together and do it right. I mean, the combine's here. Jeff Bauer is going to be here with Pat Garrity and other members of the Pistons front office, kind of directing their work through June 30th as combine members. And let it happen. You know, naturally now you would expect that some sort of president of basketball operations hire could be made any minute, any moment, and possibly by the end of this week, maybe early next week. But really, as dumb as it sounds, there's not a lot of rushing around now. You're only competing with like Toronto, I think, as far as other teams with coaching candidacies right now. So, you know, you've already blown the element of time, so you might as well take your time at this point. But Adrian Wojnarowski had the Woj bomb on Wednesday afternoon. He said, sources among candidates that Detroit is showing interest to run its basketball operations are the NBA's Kiki Vandeweghe, Memphis's Ed Stefanski, Houston's Gerson Rosas, Brooklyn's Trajan Langdon, and then Brent Berry and Miami's Shane Battier have been targeted for roles in front office too. Woj also tweeted out, GM Jeff Bauer remains a candidate to ascend to top basketball decision maker with the Pistons too, league sources tell ESPN. A notable absence from Woj's report was Chauncey Billups, which could be an indication that he's not involved at this point, but not necessarily true either. We haven't heard anything about Chauncey Billups' name linked to the Pistons since that January report from Mark Stein of the New York Times back during the season. Other people not on Woj's particular list, Sam Hinkie, thank God, and also Mike Zarin of the Celtics and Troy Weaver of Oklahoma City, two younger up-and-coming guys and two well-regarded front offices around the league. Not on there also is David Griffin, and I'm torn on him. I know he won the title with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I'm not really sold on all that much that he did in Cleveland. Hiring and firing David Blatt as coach always seemed like a swing and a miss amateur hour on both sides of the hiring and the firing. And you could pretty much chalk up that title to LeBron and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, a couple of no-brainer pickups in free agency and in the draft for the Cavs. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that David Griffin's not involved in this or not on Tom Gores' list. Sam Hinkie, Mike Zarin, Troy Weaver, Chauncey Billups. Just because those guys weren't tweeted out doesn't mean that we can cross them off the list by any point. But the guys that were on the list right now, who are these guys? Kiki Vandeweghe. He ran the Nuggets pretty unsuccessfully for a few years. He had some head scratchers of moves there and now works for the league office. He was a former high-scoring player for Denver and Portland in his playing days. Played for the Knicks and Clippers at the end of his career in the early 90s as well. I just looked up his stats on Basketball Reference. I was actually kind of semi-floored, and I know that a lot of those are inflated by teams like Denver and Portland that just ran up and down the court during many of those years in the 80s. But his best days were a little ahead of my time as a basketball fan as well. He averaged over 20 points a game for seven straight years, including 29.4 points per game for Denver in 83-84. So a really high-scoring guy. And he was, of course, involved in that 186-184 three-overtime loss to the Detroit Pistons as a member of the Denver Nuggets in 1983, still the highest-scoring game in NBA history. The next candidate Ed Stefanski, and I don't know that you could possibly have a less inspiring possible name for a front office architect than Ed Stefanski, who is with the Memphis Grizzlies right now. Definitely a model franchise for the NBA. I say that as my eyes roll. Although they actually are. They've had Chris Wallace in the past. They had John Hollinger from ESPN. They actually do have some guys that have had some success in some corners of the league, but obviously a team that's at the bottom of the NBA right now. But with Mike Conley back next year, maybe they could have a quick little rebuild there. But Stefanski had runs in the front offices with the Raptors, Sixers, and New Jersey Nets before he went over to Memphis. But a pretty uninspiring career, a retread if there ever was one. Probably the most notable list of guys that maybe Pistons fans and myself haven't studied up on or haven't known about until maybe Woj tweeted that out today. Gersan Rosas, who has been with Houston forever, 16 seasons now. He's from Columbia, so that's pretty cool. Interesting wrinkle in his life there. He's the executive of basketball operations under Daryl Morey, the architect of Houston, the king of the nerds, basically, with the NBA, and he runs the Sloan Conference, and he's an MIT guy, analytics from Boston, just kind of the god of analytics for all the people that are involved in that portion of the front office game. He is the international player personnel scout for Team USA. So obviously he knows the international game well. Jerry Colangelo and Mike Krzyzewski kind of entrusted him with a lot of the responsibilities of scouting international teams for Olympic play. It's a nice, exciting name involved in the process. Houston is smart in how they make their moves under Daryl Morey. It's a great team to emulate if you're looking for something to kind of design your team around, design your front office around. And I would love it if he's the guy to run the organization at the top. And finally, we might have a Detroit team that's kind of ahead of the curve a little bit in some ways. I know we're kind of catching up with Houston, but nothing wrong with catching up with maybe what's considered the most innovative front office in the NBA in a lot of ways. It's kind of the way that Lions fans like to think of Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia as the smartest guys in the room. Obviously, Matt Patricia is a whole other topic for a whole other day and a whole other podcast, basically, at this point. But not like Brad Ausmus and Stan Van Gundy, who kind of always acted like they were the smartest guys in the room. Now, if you bring in Rosas, you might actually have the smartest guy in the room in terms of results and delivering on those smarts and those techniques and those tools that are used by some of the better front offices in the NBA than what the Pistons have been over the past decade or so. One of the black marks on Rosas' career, a confusing situation that maybe we'll never get to the bottom of here on the outside, but in the offseason of 2013, like I said, after spending more than a decade even at that time with the Houston Rockets, he was hired as general manager to work alongside Donnie Nelson, former son of Don Nelson, who was the president of the Dallas Mavericks then, and so Rosas would be the general manager under Nelson and, of course, under owner Mark Cuban, who's a very active owner with the Mavericks too. But then on the eve of the regular season beginning, 3 months or so after he was hired as general manager, Rosas stepped aside and eventually was hired back in short order with the Houston Rockets. Kind of was explained as a role dispute at that time. So maybe in the interviews it was decided that he would have more input on what was going on with the team. But like I said, with Mark Cuban being kind of a hands-on guy with everything, it turns out, except for the sexual harassment environment of his of what's going on with the organization. But certainly with player moves and player scouting and trades and free agency and stuff like that, maybe it didn't take long for Rosas to realize that Cuban wasn't going to give up on much of that stuff, especially to someone who was under Donnie Nelson, who was, if anything else, the number two basketball guy under Cuban. So maybe Rosas thought he was the number two guy and basically found real quickly that Cuban was the guy making the decisions and was a number three guy. Speaking of guys who sometimes, depending on where you stand with Mark Cuban, is either the smartest guy in the room or thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. But anyway, most recently, Rosas was up for the Nets GM job a couple years back when they hired Sean Marks away from the San Antonio Spurs. And more recently than that, he was up for the Charlotte job this past couple months when the Hornets picked former Lakers GM Mitch Kupchak instead. And talk about uninspiring retreads. How about Mitch Kupchak? What a nightmare that would have been for Pistons fans. But Jeff Bauer, like Woj tweeted, man, I feel kind of bad for the guy at this point. I can't imagine Tom Gore is bringing him back. It seems like that would be a courtesy interview. But for Stan Van Gundy, at least Van Gundy had the history that he had and a little bit of a success as coach, even with the Pistons. Bauer pretty much only has the draft mistakes and the bad free agent signings on the top of his resume in the minds of Pistons fans. So bringing him back at the top of the front office, in my mind, would be pretty much a disaster. But the former players on this list, obviously these guys would be at best general manager candidates, with a guy like Rosas maybe pulling most of the strings at the top of the franchise. Brent Barry, as we've talked about before, pretty uninspiring in my mind. I'm not really that excited about Brent Barry, although likable on TV and all that kind of stuff. It sounds a little Matt Millen-ish now that I mentioned the likable on TV aspect of it, but maybe we won't go down that road. But Trajan Langdon, a new name to think about here, the Alaskan assassin, a former Dukie, a short NBA career as well. I was surprised that he only played 3 seasons, all with Cleveland, played overseas after that. He was the 11th pick in the draft and a bust in every sense of the word in the NBA, but not so bad of a player that it seemed back then that he wouldn't get a shot elsewhere. But obviously I was wrong about that. But like I said, instead he played overseas a couple years and then retired, went right back into the NBA in a scouting front office kind of aspect as well. He was a scout with the San Antonio Spurs, so he's got the Spurs smell on him, which is a good thing. He went back to Cleveland to work in player development after that and is now with Sean Marks of the Brooklyn Nets, one of the more highly regarded front offices in the NBA. Those guys are doing a pretty good job taking on the contracts of Mozgov to acquire D'Angelo Russell in a trade, drafting guys like Caris LeVert and Jared Allen have gotten good returns from them so far in their NBA careers. Allen Crabbe was a nice pickup. Kind of finding diamonds in the rough, like Spencer Dinwiddie. Although I will caution that not only does the team royally suck still when we're talking about the Brooklyn Nets, but those are pretty easy moves to make. You can give guys minutes. You can fill up your cap with dead money, take on future assets. It's kind of everything you dream of as a front office in terms of all the toys and cap room to play with and no pressure to win right away in an impossible situation. So a pretty easy gig for Sean Marks and his crew, and nothing really proven by those guys quite yet. Now, to Shane Battier, a Detroiter, an interesting name, a star at Detroit Country Day. He went to Duke, played 4 years there, was really one of the better college basketball players of my lifetime. I rooted against Duke usually as a Detroiter, kind of always does, but I always respected him even in his Duke days and even more so in his NBA days. I'm a Shane Battier fan as a player. He was a hard-nosed player, drew the charges, obviously always well-spoken, truly obviously one of the smarter players of his era on and off the court. There was even some talk of him going into politics, and I wish that maybe he would. I think that might be maybe a better use of his time than dealing with some of these basketball decisions. But I'll take you back. He was a guest speaker at the Kimball Knights basketball camp when I was a camper back. I don't know if I was early in high school, or maybe I was going into high school this summer, but our varsity coach, Paul Galbinski, brought in Shane Battier as the guest speaker, which was a pretty nice get back then. And this was after he was named Mr. Basketball for Country Day, and he was going into his freshman year at Duke that summer. And my friend Rick's dad, not Rick's father, we'll just call him Mike anyway. He asked Battier, raised his hand as a bratty kid, and asked him to spell Krzyzewski. And right there, Shane Battier did it real easy right off the top of his head. I still have no idea how to spell Krzyzewski, and I'm a guy who's been putting together newspaper pages and writing articles my whole career, and I wouldn't even begin to know how to spell Krzyzewski. So Shane Battier, to me, will always just be much, much smarter than I am. He studied analytics while he was still a player, and now he's with the Miami Heat, which he finished his career with and won a couple rings with, obviously, as the director of basketball development and analytics. And while reading up on Shane this afternoon and evening, I saw that his brother Jeremy, who was a younger brother, a former Detroit Country Day standout athlete as well, basketball and football. I remember him because he was always in the all-area, all-county teams in Oakland County, like I was. And I know some people that went to Country Day and have even heard about the Battiers off the court, the kind of stuff. Nothing bad, but just know of them and have mutual friends and whatnot. But I didn't know that Jeremy Battier actually died of a heroin overdose in Ohio in 2015, which was kind of flooring retiring. He was a successful businessman at the time. It was not like his life went off the tracks, seemingly, from a 1,000-mile-away perspective that I have of the situation now a few years later, obviously. He had a couple nice, you know, professional jobs over the years. Played football at Duke as well. Had a couple concussions, which, you know, obviously makes the whole thing even a little bit weirder. And then on top of that, Jeremy Battier's widow, who was a successful dentist in the Cincinnati area, they had met at Duke, and I've been reading some of the news reports today about it. She died of a heroin overdose less than 2 months later. So just a strange situation there. Obviously, nothing in relation to Shane Battier's possible candidacy with the Detroit Pistons, but some, you know, interesting and sad, and obviously speaks to a larger problem that we have in our country with the heroin epidemic that we have. And hopefully, we're taking steps as a country and a people to address these kind of things. But just, you know, some sad tidbits and news that I kind of wanted to pass along in a human interest kind of way. But as, you know, transitioning back to Shane Battier and his front office career, which is obviously a shaky, weird transition to make. But anyway, as for him possibly coming back to the Detroit area, I would love it. He's a Detroiter. There's never been a doubt about that. But he's never really tied into the city or the state as much as guys like Chris Webber and Jalen Rose, and obviously they have the tie of playing collegiately in Michigan as well. But even like a Derek Coleman, who's we all identify as a Detroiter, even though he went to Syracuse. But it would be nice to have one of those smart, overachieving guys that it's just like a beloved kind of professional athlete to kind of come home to Detroit and be part of the Pistons organization. And it would be really nice to have one of the finest Michiganders, a class act, played the game hard, smart dude, just kind of always. I've always had an affinity for Shane Battier from afar, and I think he'd be a great fit with this team. So come home, Shane. We'd love to have you back. But we'll be speaking of some look backs, and how about today in Pistons playoff playback coming up next. Since we can't live in the present, we will relive the past here on this podcast. It is now time for Pistons playoff playback, taking you back to 1991, maybe the last great triumph for the Bad Boys. Two titles later, the Detroit Pistons and Boston Celtics were definitely on different roads since the last meeting in the 1988 Eastern Conference Finals, where the Pistons finally got over the Boston hump in six games, only to lose to the LA Lakers in their first franchise appearance in the NBA Finals. But since then, the Pistons went ahead and won the next two titles. Meanwhile, Boston lost in round one the following season, 1989, to Detroit in a sweep without Larry Bird, who missed most of the season with an injury, and then lost in round one to the Knicks the following year. But then they got through Indiana in 1991 in the first round in a tough five-game series, only to meet Detroit once again, this time the two-time defending champion Bad Boys, who had turned this rivalry on its ear and turned it into a one-sided affair in favor of the Boys from the Motor City after Boston had dominated the first half of it in the late 80s. This was age 34 for Larry Bird, his second to last season, and the 25-year-old Reggie Lewis had effectively taken over this team and was the future for rookie coach Chris Ford and the Boston Celtics. Boston had a nice season with Larry Bird back healthy, well, healthy-ish, I guess, as he got to later on in his career. They had 56 wins. They were the two seed going into the Eastern Conference playoffs, holding home court advantage over the third-seeded Pistons. And McHale, at 33, was coming off the bench. Robert Parrish was 37 at this time. D. Brown, the slam dunk champion, was a key cog off the bench as well. So the series started with the Celtics at home in Boston. The Pistons would win Game 1, but then drop Game 2 without the injured Isaiah Thomas, who missed that one. Gerald Henderson got the start over Vinnie Johnson, and that one is Chuck Daly probably wanted to keep VJ in his role off the bench. The Celtics came to Detroit and took Game 3 at the Palace in a blowout win as Zeke returned to the lineup, but the Pistons evened it up in Game 4 as Isaiah returned to the bench and did not play in Game 4, but they had 34 points from Mark Aguirre to even up that series. And then in a big Game 5, 32 points from Joe Dumars gave Detroit a convincing Game 5 victory in Boston to put themselves in the driver's seat before Game 6 in Detroit. And that's where we are today on May 17th, 1991, as the Pistons got a 117-113 win at home at the Palace to clinch the series. the final series win in the careers of Isaiah Thomas, Chuck Daly, Joe Dumars. In the clincher, Joe Dumars had 32 points again, 17 for starter Buddha Edwards, 17 for Isaiah Thomas, who was hobbled but still played off the bench in that one. VJ did get the start in Game 6 for the injured Isaiah Thomas. Bill Laimbeer had 15 and 14 as still a starter for the Pistons, and Kevin McHale, 34 points off the bench in the loss to close out his outstanding series as the Celtics' dominant era was coming to an end at this point. The Pistons would move on to the third round and get the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals for the third straight season, although the Magic would run out in a major way there, as we will get to in a future episodes of Pistons Playoff Playback. Reggie Lewis would become an All-Star in the following season, but we would be dead of a heart attack one more year after that as he was getting ready for the 1993-94 season. Then the Bad Boys era would effectively end the following season as well, with a first-round loss to the New York Knicks in Chuck Daly's final season with the Detroit Pistons. But let me know if you got any memories of these times as the post-Bad Boys era rolled into some even more, you know, worse times for the Detroit Pistons, a few years of irrelevance, and we know all about that here as current-day Detroit Pistons fans. But give us a follow on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons. Give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook, and give us a rating and review and subscribe to us on iTunes as well. I'll be at the Combine today and tomorrow, so we'll come back with a Friday episode, despite the fact that we're not doing too many Friday episodes this offseason. But look for some content there, and more with the tumultuous offseason that the Pistons are having with a new regime coming in as well. So thanks for listening, everyone. This is your host, Matt Shook, for Locked On Pistons, and we will talk to you all again very soon.